Welcome to Stick Like Glue Radio, the only podcast dedicated to helping you create your dream business so you can live the dream lifestyle that you want and deserve. Yes, success is not only possible, you deserve success. And now, welcome the dream business coach, Jim Palmer.
Well, hello there, everybody. Welcome to Stick Like Glue Radio. This is the only podcast dedicated to helping you create an everlasting bond with your customers so they stay longer, spend more, and refer more. Those are great things in any business. We're in our fourth year now with Stick Like Glue Radio. I'm your host, Jim Palmer, the Dream Business Coach. I'm committed to helping you build a more profitable business fast. I'm really excited about this week's show. My special guest is award-winning entrepreneur and fellow marketer, Julie Broad. Let me briefly introduce Julie, and we'll bring her right on. Julie Broad is an award-winning entrepreneur, recognized real estate investor, and a popular speaker and workshop trainer, known for helping real estate investors and new entrepreneurs who aren't naturally born to sell, build a brand to get results, make an impact, and ultimately make more money. Her first book was called More Than Cashflow, debuted at number one overall on Amazon, and went on to win an international book award. Her newest release is called The New Brand You, launched in June 2016. It's quickly climbing the sales charts after its initial release in early July. And you can connect with her at havemoreinfluence.com. Julie, how are you today? Thanks for coming on my program.
Fantastic. Thanks for having me, Jim.
Oh, my pleasure. I cover a lot of different topics, but my favorite is always marketing and branding and stuff like that. So if people want to get a little bit more of a background, I know you got a real heavy background in real estate. When did that start?
Ooh, it started in 2001, so you start to figure out ages when you ask questions like that. But
okay, let's see. That's yeah, 15 years ago.
Yeah, and I was 24, so there you go.
Okay.
When I was working in a sales job at the time, and I was looking around, and I was getting ready to go back to university to do my MBA. And I kept thinking, I just finished paying off my student loans, and I thought, I don't want to do this again, you know, graduate with nothing but debt for a second time. So I started looking around, like, what can I do to get my money working for me while I'm in school? And the only answer I kept coming back to was real estate. So I bought a couple of properties and put property managers in place and went to university. And I realized, hey, I kind of like this real estate thing. It was making me money while I was going to school. And so I had partnered with my boyfriend at the time, and we just kept going. We, you know, bought five more in the next 2 years and just kept buying and buying from there. So that's where the real estate thing started.
So they, you bought them and then had them as rental properties, or did you flip them over, did you flip them and sell them?
Yeah, no, we were buy and hold primarily. Flipping is a job. And so if you want to have income while you're doing something else, which was my goal, I was in school, you can't be flipping. Flipping, you really got to be on top of it all the time. So we haven't really done a lot of that. We've really been focused on lifestyle, which I know is something you really talk about, is building that lifestyle. And for us, real estate was a way to create a lifestyle without having to be doing it 24/7.
Lifestyle, so you know what? So it's so important because people, you know, when you start a business, you have some initial goals like buying food and covering rent, but then you start getting some success and you have bigger goals. But what I found is that no matter where you are, when you reach that goal, you just boom, let's just create another one, and you keep going and going and going. And next thing I know, you're old and feeble and you've done nothing but work. And not that you don't have anything to show for it, but I made a decision a few years ago to really I'm still growing, but not with the, you know, fervor that I was, because I really enjoy my life and my grandkids and my boat and things like that. And I'll tell you this, it's I'm 19 years older than you, so you know, I'm at the point, quick math there. I'm at the point, Julie, where, you know, I'm basically running my coaching practice 3 days a week, and in the summertime, you know, enjoying my boat. But it's really hard. It's a very, people are like, oh, I'd love to be, but it's a very difficult mindset. When on, you know, Monday and Friday, I usually take off, and it's like the marina is empty, people are off working, and for a little while there, you feel guilty. So just, you got to, that's one of the things that a lot of people need to work on. I know it seems strange, but if you're a worker bee or, you know, someone who, you know, doesn't mind work and in fact enjoys, you know, building the business, it's a difficult thing to overcome. I don't know how I went down that rabbit hole, but I shared that with you. Oh, I know, because we talked about lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
So Julie, you did real estate for a long time, and I know one of the things that you learned in real estate was how important it is to have a brand. I mean, you as a real estate person, it's your brand. So, you know, kind of picking up on the book that you just wrote, and congratulations on the new brand. You is that? Did you start having people want to know, hey, how did you create your brand, and is that why you did that?
Yeah, I mean, kind of. So if we back up a little bit, I when I graduated from university the first time, I ended up in a sales job, not because I'm a salesperson, but because that's just what paid the most when I was graduating. The sales job was the highest paying, and it had a company car. So these are great perks. And so I went into sales, but I'm actually a really high introvert. And so networking and, you know, being outgoing and chatting with people is not something that I'm really particularly strong at, especially in new situations. You know, I tend to be the person who sits there and observes everything, not necessarily the one in the middle of the action. So sales was really challenging for me initially. But and of course, real estate is ultimately sales and marketing. No matter what angle of real estate you're in, you really have to be good at sales and marketing. So as we really started to expand and get full-time into a real estate business, we started to need to raise a lot of money because you eventually run out of access to capital. The banks mm-hmm. stop lending you money and things like that. So we had to raise money to keep growing our portfolio. But raising money is hardcore sales in a lot of scenarios. So what I found worked really well for us was, and when I say us, my husband is my partner on all of our real estate transactions. So what worked well for us was building that brand so that people contacted us. So instead of us going around like trying to convince people to invest in real estate with us, we had people calling us saying, hey, I hear you invest in real estate. I don't want to do the work. I've got all this money. Will you take my money and put it into real estate? And so I spent a lot of time and effort to build that brand so people called me so that I didn't have to have those uncomfortable sales conversations and network like a crazy person, which was something that exhausted me and wasn't really all that fun. So that's how I got into that, and people really started to notice because I was building this brand, a lot of people in Canada, that's where I live in Canada, really started to pay attention to what we were doing, and I got contacted by media and places like that, you know, asking me questions. And so it just kind of snowballed from there, and then people were always saying, okay, well, how did you raise millions and millions of dollars? And that's ultimately where the branding piece came in.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, I was doing a little research. I saw you on, I think it was like Good Morning Ottawa or something like that. You were on a morning show. That was pretty cool. That's which is pretty cool about being an author, right? I mean, that's really why it's one of the main benefits of actually sitting down and writing a book, because it's not easy to write a book. And, you know, I was looking at your book, The New Brand You, and in chapter one, you had a section about your greatest fear as an author happened. Do you want to share that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my greatest fear was a one-star Amazon review. When I was writing my first book, I was just terrified of what people would think, ultimately. It was kind of a tell-all book. It's not your typical real estate book where they teach you how to make millions in real estate. Mine was more like a you know, confessions of a real estate investor, where I was telling all the things that we did wrong and all the mistakes that we made. And a lot of them, people didn't know. Like my coaching clients who'd paid me a lot of money to work with me, and my family members, a lot of them didn't know the stuff we'd been through. So I was pretty afraid of judgment, and it was also a very open book. Like if you didn't like it, you were kind of in a way not liking me. So
right.
I was really afraid of that one-star review, because that was like a one-star review of Julie, and I didn't want that. But, yeah, so I said, and ultimately it happened, and I think I've had a couple one-star reviews now. And what I really learned from it was a couple pieces. One was that, you know, people are going to judge you no matter what happens. So you really have to, you know, put yourself out there and know there's always going to be people who won't like it. They're going to say bad things about you. They're going to be jealous of your success, whatever it might be. So there's always going to be people who judge you. So just focus on adding value, focus on the people that you can help, and forget about those one-star reviewers that are out there. Because chances are they're probably not that happy in their life, and they're probably not your ideal client anyways. So, you know, there's only so many people you can help. So that was kind of the one thing. And the other thing was that ultimately you have to be you, and again, kind of accept that there's some people that won't like you. But you know what? If you're being you, then that's actually a good thing. Like if nobody has an opinion about you, you're too vanilla. It means you're not standing out. It means nobody's going to care about you. So, yeah, you're fitting in and you're playing it safe, but that's not a good way to run a business.
That's exactly right. You know, so I've written 6 books, and my first book took me 18 months, and I wrote my last 2 in 60 days. And when I wrote my first book, part of what – I actually wrote it in about a year, and I was just for 6 months constantly – proofreading it, like so afraid my name's going to be on the cover. God forbid somebody thinks I didn't pass the 6th grade, right, with some kind of a grammar or spelling mistake. And, yep. You know, I got a lot of compliments from it. I think my first book sold like 8,000 copies, which I thought was holy crap. Not huge, but somebody wrote me this email, Julie, and they said, hey, I just thought you'd like to know on page like 46, you have a dangling participle. Now, I honest to God, and to this day, I don't know what a dangling participle is. And I said, well, did you get anything out of the book? Oh, yeah, it was really good, but, you know, just thought you'd like to know. And that was like a lesson for me, because I didn't go to school for journalism and writing. I happen to know some good things about marketing and business building, and that's what I share. And the fact that I'm not a professional writer is like, okay, there's going to be people who have an issue with it, but like you said, they're not going to be my client. So you just got to, the best of your ability, you know, water off a duck's back.
Yeah, and I mean, it's easier said than done, but, you know, just know that there are people out there that you can help, and just focus on them. They're worth your time.
Does everyone, Julie, need a personal brand? I mean, or does it depend if you're an entrepreneur, or does it depend what kind of an – I mean, suppose you're like a behind-the-scenes just running maybe like some kind of a website business or something. But does everybody need a brand?
Well, it's a good question. The thing is, creating a great brand, one that clearly reflects who you are and what you do, it makes everything in your life easier. So, yeah, even if you're behind the scenes, there may come a time where you want a different job or you want to do something different. And if you have a strong personal brand, it'll make it easier. And the stronger your brand, the more money you will be paid. And so if you like money, it helps. But the thing that I think a lot of people miss is that you already have a brand. We all have a brand, but a lot of us haven't taken the time to cultivate it and become comfortable with selling ourselves within that brand. You know, we kind of let things happen to us instead of getting behind the wheel in the driver's seat and make things happen. So you can let people come up with their own idea of who you are and what value that you have and that you're sharing with others, and hope that people see you the way you want to be seen, or you can learn to communicate it so that people see you the way you want to see you. So it's your choice, but ultimately a great brand and having kind of a clear and concise message behind who you are and what you do, it'll help you no matter what you do.
You know, when some people hear the word branding, they think logos, websites, Facebook pages, things like that. Now, is that largely what you're talking about, or is that just a piece of it?
Yeah, good question. Not at all. To me, those are tools. Those are tools to showcase your brand if you choose to use them. But when I'm talking brand, I'm talking about the things that connect with people. It's back to that ideal customer again, which, you know, everybody here, if they've been listening to your podcast and know marketing, I'm sure you've had lots of conversations about ideal customers. To me, the elements of a great brand, I actually created an acronym just to keep it simple, and I call it the MAGIC brand formula. And MAGIC is the acronym. And to me, these are kind of the pillars of that brand that create the connection. And the M is for message. You have to have a clear and consistent message, and typically want to voice them using the right mediums that are appropriate to who you want to be connecting with. But for me, a message comes down to the stories you tell. So if you can have a few core stories that are core to who you are and kind of illustrate who you are and how you help, that's a really powerful way to create a clear brand. And ultimately, we all learn through stories. We retell stories all the time, so that's a powerful way to do it. The A in MAGIC is for appearance. And, you know, as much as I love the comfort of sweatpants, and I honestly, I rock them around my neighborhood when I'm walking my dogs all the time. You're not going to see me on a video or on the stage doing talks in sweatpants. You know, just because they're comfortable doesn't mean I feel confident in them. So when you're showcasing your brand, you want to look and feel awesome. I'm never going to tell somebody to wear a suit or to wear a certain kind of thing. But just think about what you're wearing and if you feel great in it, because that's really what it comes back to, I think. And if you have a certain style, like if you like 1920s or you love hats, you know, use that in your branding because it makes you stand out. But ultimately, you know, make sure that when you are showcasing your brand, you wear what makes you feel fantastic. G is for Google results. And more and more, I think that you are who Google says you are. Unfortunately for you, it looks like you're competing with a very famous baseball player. So when somebody Googles your name, you've got that challenge. But I like the way that you've kind of changed things and you still show up on page one when somebody Googles your name. But Google is critical. And if you've been paying attention to the software and technology world, Apple quietly announced that they purchased a company with facial recognition and body language reading software. And Google's been reportedly working on this for quite a while to integrate it with their Google Glass, you know, those eyeglasses that people wear sometimes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, right now people are Googling each other's names before meetings and when they hear about you, but it's not that far away before you're getting Googled when you walk in a room, because people are going to be able to take a picture of you and do a reverse lookup. They're going to have the Google Glasses on, and it's going to, you know, be like
for
almost
real?
Like on a – yeah, it's not
wow.
that far away. So think about that and how important what's showing up when somebody's Googling you. So now is a good time to get on top of it, because it's not something you can fix instantly. And actually, with this point, I do have a download, if it's okay if I mention it, that people,
sure.
It's called the Google Results Game Plan. So I created a 4-page document to kind of help people, if they're not happy with their Google results, to kind of fix it. So they can get that at havemoreinfluence.com. And then it's just forward slash Google Game Plan. So just Google
okay.
Game Plan. So my website and Google Game Plan. And it'll walk them through this piece, because I could take quite a long time to explain some of the things to do. But just get in control of what Google's showing about you. It'll make a big difference in the near future, I'm sure of it. The I is for I am an expert in. And for me, it's not necessarily – if somebody's new to starting a business, I don't want them to get hung up on the fact that they might not be an expert yet. To me, it's really about focusing, and the more focused you are, the faster you become an expert anyways. In real estate, we saw this really clearly. At one point, we had property in 6 different cities across Canada, and it was a bit of a mess, actually, because we couldn't control anything. We never really knew truly what was happening in the backyards of each of our properties. But when we really started ramping up and buying a house a month, we decided to focus on 2 neighborhoods only. And we had this fear, like, there might not be enough deals for us to do the volume that we wanted to do. But we realized that as we focused and became an expert, we actually were doing better and better and better deals. So as you focus, you become an expert, and I think it actually elevates your game, and you get paid more and you lower the risks of what you're doing. So just focus now and build your expertise. You can always branch out later. This C in magic is for character, and I think this one's really, really important, because your brand should be aligned with your personal values and really reflect your personality. So the best example I can think of, have you ever read the Seth Godin's Purple Cow?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, so, I mean, his Purple Cow concept is basically the purple cow in the field stands out. So use your personality to stand out. A lot of us have spent many years kind of trying to fit in, but you can't stand out and you can't have people coming to you, which was ultimately the point of the brand, is to be chased, not chasing, if you look like all the other cows in the field. So use your values, use your personality to stand out and be unique. And those are kind of the pillars. None of them are logo, website, you know, Facebook profiles, but ultimately those are tools that you can use to communicate those pillars.
I like that. I mean, I'm a huge fan of acronyms, and I think, man, you've done a really good job with magic. I like everything you've shared there. You know, in chapter 3 of your book, you have Is Selling Bad? Everybody hates to sell, right? Everybody likes to make sales, but everybody hates to sell. What kind of tips do you have there?
Yeah, it's a good one. And a lot of people that I've worked with over the years have felt uncomfortable with it, and probably because ultimately, as I shared, I was not born to be in sales. So how I got comfortable with it and how I stopped ever thinking like sales was a bad thing was I stopped looking at it as sales and started looking at it as serving. And if you have somebody across from you who you can help, you're not really selling them. You're just trying to explain to them how you can make their life better, help them get where they want to go. And, you know, right from my very first job where I was selling Kotex and Huggies and Kleenex for Kimberly-Clark, I started to look at people, the sales calls I was making, and instead of being focused on me saying, okay, I need more shelf space, I need this display space, which is all about me, I started looking at the person across from me and going, okay, how can I help them look good to their boss? Or how can I make their job today easier? And when I did that, I made them happy, and I also started to get way better results as a salesperson. And I felt good about it because I was doing good things to help people in their lives and in their jobs. So that's how I kind of flipped it and made it work for me. There's other approaches, but that's, to me, that's kind of the best way to make selling feel fantastic.
It's so interesting. You know, I totally believe in the whole serve first, you know, provide some value strategy. And I was doing a call with somebody about a week ago, one of my students, and they said, I got three really important calls this week. I'm really afraid I'm not going to close the sales. I said, well, stop trying. She goes, what? I said, get on the phone, figure out how you can best serve them. Listen to what their needs are, find out where their pain points are, and talk about different strategies. And don't be afraid of giving too much. You know, if they're going to so connect with you, they're going to ask the question. And 3 out of 3 times it said, this is amazing. How can I work with you? You know, and then it just becomes, it's a conversation about your services. When people, you know, selling is, I don't know where selling ever got a bad name, but, you know, if people want what you have. People like to have things. They like to acquire things. They like to invest in things. But, you know, they hate being sold to. And I think that's where the breakdown is.
Mm-hmm. I think you know, it goes back to I did a lot of sales training in my career as a salesperson, and it goes back to that always be closing type mentality that is driven into you in a lot of the traditional sales training, and that is an uncomfortable place. Like if in the back of your head you're thinking, I have to close this sale, of course you're going to feel yucky in your stomach because it actually might not be a good fit for you to close that person, or maybe you guys haven't figured out where the fit is yet, and so it's, you know, it's just not a good time or the right situation to close it. So,
very cool. You know, in your book, again, it's called The New Brand You, there's an interesting chapter called How to Make Your Words Meaningless, which is kind of interesting for a book. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, I'm not actually encouraging people to make their words meaningless. Where it really comes from is a lot of people say the right things but don't get results. And, you know, I have so many examples, but one of my favorites was we used to have this workshop for raising money, helping real estate investors raise money, teaching them how to have conversations that sell, basically. And at the end of this workshop, this woman came up to me and said, I can't believe that I'm doing it. And she explained that she'd been passed over for a promotion 3 times. She'd been in the same job for 8 years. And the most recent time that she was passed over for the promotion, she was beside herself because she was by far the most qualified and far more experienced than the person that did get promoted. So she went to her boss and said, you know, why did you choose that person and not me? And all her boss said was, people don't think that you know what you're talking about. They don't have confidence in you as a leader. Well, she walked away really perplexed because she does know what she's talking about. But at the workshop, she figured out why. And what she was doing was, instead of saying, just as an example, the supplier we should go with is Joe Sawyer, right, command. She was saying, the supplier we should go with is Joe Sawyer. She raised her voice at the end of almost every single sentence, and that sounds like a question. It doesn't sound like a statement. So people thought that she was always asking for reassurance. She wasn't sounding confident. So she could say the exact right solution, but because she raised her voice at the end of the sentence, it sounded like she was asking.
Isn't that interesting?
And there's a whole bunch of things.
Yeah, I thought I'm sorry for interrupting. There's something very similar to that. I call it don't be a weak-kneed Willie. You know, have some steel in your spine. Because if people aren't going to give money to people who go, well, this is what I do. And, you know, let me know if you have any questions. I'm more than happy to help you. Or you say, this is what I do. Blah, 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 blah. Let's, you know, boom, let's go. You know, maybe not that abruptly. But there's when you project confidence, if somebody's going to give you money, they want to give it the money that they have confidence that they're going to get a return on their investment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's a lot of things that we do that will erode that confidence in other people. You know, it's voice tone. If you're talking too fast or you talk too slow, if somebody talks too slow, you don't sound as intelligent. It's one of those things that if you're not paying attention to this, too many filler words, you know, the list goes on. But it's also body language. You know, I love Seinfeld episodes for this. If it could be a Seinfeld episode, it's not going to get you the sale. You know, if the close talker, the low talker, you know, they've done all these ones. But if you're standing too close to somebody, they're not going to be paying attention to what you're saying. They're thinking about getting out of there. They want their personal space. So these are all things that people do that make your words meaningless, because it doesn't matter what you're saying if people don't either believe you or they're not listening to you because of something else that you're doing.
So we're starting to run out of time, but I want to ask you, I want to jump back to Google a little bit. I mean, that's always one of the hot topics people understand least, but know it's very, very important. So you mentioned the Google test, and you gave the URL, and you can give that again. But just briefly talk about the Google test, and what can people expect with that?
Yeah, for sure. There's basically three elements. One is, are you easy to find? And if you're not, to kind of think through that piece. And what I mean by that is, a lot of people think that their business card is getting handed out, or if somebody's referring you, they're giving somebody your name and website. But that's not always the case. I mean, how many times are you in the parking lot and somebody goes, oh, hey, by the way, do you know somebody who does X? And they go, yeah, call Julie. And they're like, okay, great. And then they leave. And then they go back to their desk and they try to find you. So if your name is really hard to remember, then people aren't going to find you. So when you're thinking about your branding, it's worth considering how they're going to Google you. So if you've got a complicated name, and there's a realtor in Toronto that does this, beautiful example. Her last name is Kirsanowski, I think is how her last name goes. So she goes by Margie K, because she knows that nobody's ever going to know how to pronounce it. Nobody's ever going to know how to spell it. So she just goes by Margie K. And so she was thinking about, how are people going to refer me and how are people going to look me up later? So that's kind of the first piece, is thinking about that. But then, of course, it's what's showing up. So is it you? Are you happy with what's there? Check the images. You know, go through all the links, not just the first page, but you know how Google has the choices. It's like news, article. I can't remember the four choices, but it goes, the first one is web, and then it's images, and then it's something else, and then it goes news. Check all of those. See everything that's showing up under your name and try to get control of it. If you don't already own your name as a URL, then you want to buy it. If you can't buy it, like jimpalmer.com, you buy get Jim Palmer, or you find some other way to get your name as a URL so that you do start showing up. And then, of course, it's about controlling what's there. So if you have sites that you don't like that are showing up and you can't get rid of it, you want to bury those links. Use social media. Use whatever you can, media outlets. Get interviewed on podcasts or whatever you need to do, so that those things rank higher and higher over top of the links that you don't want to show.
Very cool. So, Julie, I know you do have an undergrad in business, you have an MBA, but you actually do say in the book, ditch that degree. Why do you say that?
Oh, two reasons. One is that the degree, I'm all for education, by the way, big on training, big on education, but a lot of times you don't need the degree that you think you do to get where you want to go. You got to think clearly about what life you want to create, the business you want to create, or the business you want to be in. What I do today, I did not need an MBA to do. Don't regret doing my MBA, but I did an MBA to get a six-figure salary. That is ultimately what I was pursuing. When I woke up with that six-figure salary, I had worked really hard to create a life I didn't want. And it was a pretty tough wake-up call to realize that I'd spent a lot of money and a lot of time getting somewhere I didn't want to go. I should have thought about the life I wanted, looked around, found a coach or a mentor, somebody doing what I wanted to do, and paid them. It would have been cheaper, and I would have got where I wanted to go a lot faster. So that's part of it. The other part is that a lot of education makes us, and I use this word in my book, this a sesquipedalian wordsmith. In other words, education teaches you to use jargon and big fancy words, and that's not the best way to communicate and connect with people, and really that's what having a great brand and marketing and selling is all about, is connection and communication. And if you're using big words, it's not a great way to communicate. You're not going to connect with most of the people that you're talking to.
Wow, really good stuff. So if you would, I'm sure people are going to want to connect with you and learn more. And by the way, she's got a bunch of videos on YouTube and everything. So what's a good website? And why don't you share the URL for that download or handout as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So havemoreinfluence.com is my website. And that's the best way to find the videos, find me, email me, et cetera. And then the download is at havemoreinfluence.com, and then it's just a / Google game plan. Let me just double-check that. I had it written down. I'll make sure I've got it so I'm not sending you guys astray. Yep, it's Google game plan.
No 404
so
pages.
Exactly. Then you'll see a picture of my dog if you ever get to a 404 page, one of my dogs. So the havemoreinfluence.com / Google game plan, no spaces.
Well, it's been a lot of fun, Julie. Thanks so much for coming on. I'd love to have you on again in a few months. We can keep the conversation going.
Oh, that'd be fantastic. Thanks, Jim. It was great chatting with you.
Okay. Hey, folks, that wraps up this very special episode of Stick Like Glue Radio with author and marketer Julie Broad. Remember, Stick Like Glue is the only podcast dedicated to helping you create an everlasting bond with your customers so they stay longer, spend more, and refer more. I am your host, Jim Palmer, the Dream Business Coach. I'm committed to helping you build a more profitable business faster. That is a wrap for this week. Watch for another great episode of Stick Like Glue Radio this time next week. Until then, keep taking action, keep moving forward, and don't ever give up. Hey, now go out there and do something nice for somebody today. Take care.
For more information and free resources on how to create your dream business, connect with Jim Palmer, the Dream Business Coach, at www.getjimpalmer.com. And be sure to check out Dream Business Coach TV, powerful 2-minute videos filled with Jim's unique smart marketing and business building advice. See them all at www.dreambizcoach.tv. That's www.dreambizcoach.tv. See you next week for more Stick Like Glue Radio. And remember, success is not only possible, you deserve success.